Okay, then we're going to go ahead and call the meeting to order a few minutes late here, 10:07. We'll convene the Health and Wellness Committee. And first thing we'll do is call roll. Myself, Boker, present. Salinas?
Present.
Watson?
Present.
O'Neill?
Present.
Story?
Present.
Albright? And Albright not present. We have been notified by Green, Steve Green, Chris Call, and Michael Muir that they will not be, and Daniel Deer, that they could not attend this meeting. I was joking, we need to get a wellness committee for the wellness committee because they started dropping like flies. So with that, Anderson, I'm sorry.
Present.
You know, it's the lack of the name tag that's throwing me off. It's the I'm sorry. I'm using my notes from the last meeting. It says new next time. And so thanks for joining us. I know last time Mike gave an introduction of himself. And so I believe we need to have a motion to excuse any of the members that you might feel need excuse absence.
I'll make a motion to go ahead and accept their absences.
Okay, got a motion by Salinas to accept the absence of DeYeer, Muir, Call, and Green. I did not hear from Albright. Did he reach out to y'all? Okay. I want to make sure we don't have an email problem with him. So after the conclusion of this meeting, I'll reach out and I'll phone him, make sure that we're not disenfranchising him unintentionally. So a motion by Salinas.
Second.
And a second by Story. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Next, we're at the meeting minutes, and I had two corrections to make on the minutes. Our new member, Mike Anderson, I don't know what department. That looked like AI picked up the wrong department for you.
Yeah.
The minutes should reflect that Mike Anderson works for Pflugerville Fire Department. I can see how AI would not get that spelling right. And then,
yeah, foldable armor.
And then the second correction was on the list of duties. It had Homer Salinas listed under the cardiac health project, and that should have been myself, Doug Boker. And any other corrections? I get a motion to accept the minutes with corrections.
I'll make a motion to accept with corrections.
Okay, a motion by Story.
Second.
Second by Anderson. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And the minutes pass. Okay, a presentation on committee-related resources. Where are we at on this one? Where'd that one come from? Yeah, committee-related resources. I know we're going to do committee reports. Does anybody have anything for four?
That's not.
Well, I got one I can put in there. That's the assignments. So committee-related resources, this falls in actually better than where I was going to insert them. We had conversation last meeting that one of the frailties of this committee could be that we don't have a more in-depth healthcare member, or we don't have researchers, and so we had talked about our ability to reach out to outside resources, and I've done that with a new company that's doing health and wellness physicals, the first responder family clinics. And I was talking with them about their VO2 and how it corresponds with the 1500 requirements now. And the department I previously worked for did not do VO2. But I had the chance at the Texas Fire Chiefs annual conference in Waco last week to tour their new trailer that they're touring with. And I thought it was interesting how they measure VO2 and how they do their stress test, and I plan to use some of their research, hopefully some of their data for my committee. And so I'd like to ask Mr. Bittner if he'd give us the one-minute version. He and I share apparently a lack of brevity.
Yeah, unfortunately, I like to talk, and I'm very passionate about this subject. As Chief Boker mentioned, my name's Jerry Bittner. My wife, Desiree Bittner, who's the medical brains behind the organization from First Response Clinic, and we've been testing firefighters under the 1582, now 1500 protocol. And one of the aspects that is looked at heavily is the cardiovascular part. That's still killing more firefighters.
Mr. Steve, Chief Boker asked me to say things about that. We do test for cardiovascular and how important that is. We use a 12-lead EKG with a first protocol console where we're actually looking at the electrical aspect of the heart. And it's just as important as that is because it's a firefighter, we're also looking at their cardiovascular shape when they're doing this test. They have to reach a minimum of what's called 12 METs. A MET is a measurement of workload that means pretty much nothing to anybody except in the cardiovascular field, or maybe if they're an exercise physiologist. But based on the testing that we do, or that can be done on a firefighter with a stress test, we're looking at their heart, their EKG, and then their cardiovascular shape at the same time. And it's measured in what's called VO2 max. VO2 max is basically how efficient your body and your heart uses oxygen in stressful conditions. So there's a couple different ways that's measured, and it depends really on the department how they want to go. We can either do that by, or it can be done out in the field. And I say this generically because our mission is very generic in the sense of trying to help firefighters stay healthy and get them healthy. And that doesn't have to be just us. Anybody that's in that mission, I speak on behalf of all of them and say, you can do that by, there's a mask, and we actually have a Bluetooth mask that measures back to an iPad, and it actually will measure the oxygen efficiency as you are stressing that individual or that firefighter. The other way we can do that is through calculation, and it uses a number of different things to create a formula, and we're able to calculate how efficient or what shape they're in. What does VO2 max mean? We explain this to the firefighters. It's like if you reach a certain level, and it's based on age, so the scale, as you get older, they give you a little bit more leeway and gratis that you don't have to quite be in the same shape as a 22-year-old. That tells us how efficient they're going to be on the fire ground. In other words, how many bottles of air can they go before they have to take a break? And we can actually pinpoint, or the healthcare community now can actually pinpoint, by looking at that VO2 max score based on this tread bell, and say, this guy's able to do two bottles before he really needs to take a break. So he's pretty efficient, right? And then you have to take a break, and then you can repeat the process. But let me just mention also, we look at the structure of the heart through ultrasound to make sure the heart is pumping efficiently. There's no valve issues. And there isn't a thickening of the walls or the heart getting enlarged, because that can lead to potential problems too. So let me give you just a real quick story, and then I'm done. We were testing an individual. He is a captain with a fairly large organization to the east of here at fire service. And as he was doing his stress, I was actually conducting it. As he was doing his stress test, I noticed that his waveform was changing as he was becoming more and more under stress. And the waveform in his heart was showing what they call ST depression. And it was getting progressively worse. I'm watching him. He looks fine. I asked him, are you experiencing any pain? And I asked that with all Or we ask that with all of our members when we're testing. Are you experiencing any issues, any pain, any lightheaded, any dizziness, feeling funny? And he was like, the answers were no, no, no to everything. And then, you know, I'm seeing this going on, and I just said, hey, by the way, do you have a cardiologist? You're in your 50s. And he was a non-smoker. He was physically fit. He looked great. He wasn't profusely sweating or anything that you think about in a cardiac event. And he's like, no, I'm all good. And, yeah, my wife actually works for a cardiologist. And I was like, oh, that's great. I said, the nurse practitioner, when they review your findings, is going to tell you this, but I'm going to tell you ahead of time. Take this EKG over to your wife's doctor and let him just scan that. You take a look at it and see what he thinks. Because I'm seeing what they call depression. And he was a paramedic, and he goes, oh, I understand. That means my heart's having a little struggle getting enough oxygen. I said, that is correct, exactly. He took it over there that day. He was on duty. The pumper stopped by his wife's cardiologist's office and showed the doctor. The doctor said, you need to call in. You're off duty. I'm going to have to take a look at you. The next morning, they capped him, and he had two stents put in. And I knew none of this. We knew none of this at the time. He comes back a couple of weeks later and goes, my doctor, my wife's boss, just told me that you guys saved my life because you saw something that I wasn't feeling, that was not recognized by me in any way, but I could have been on fire and exerted myself enough that my heart became hypoxic enough that it would have gone into a lethal rhythm and I could have died right there. So then, it was like, that was truly heartwarming. No pun intended. For me, to see that and to hear that success story. And we're seeing those more and more. So it's real important, the conclusion of all this, it's very important the firefighters get a physical. And they get an in-depth physical yearly and annually to check for things like that. Because there's a lot of silent killers in the fire service that come up quickly. And that's the heart is still the number one that's taking guys out. Yes.
Hi, thank you so much for your presentation. Where are you guys located?
We are currently in the Houston area. We have two clinics, one on the north side in the
Conroe. Familiar with Conroe area?
Yes, sir.
And then we have a clinic over by 290 and Highway 6 area. We have, I don't know if I should say this, we have two more on the map that we have to put together yet. And then we have a mobile clinic that was just unveiled at the Texas Fire Chiefs and FDIC, where we can actually bring it to a department.
Awesome. Well, very good. And then you talked about doing a 12-lead in the Bruce protocol. That's the 3-minute stair step on the treadmill. Is that correct?
The protocol will take you upwards of 10 to 12 minutes to reach those maximum METs. What we do is two things. We want to get to your target heart rate, which is based upon your age, and then we want to get you to the 12 METs, which is the workload that NFPA says that a firefighter should achieve. Now, here's the key to this. If a firefighter can't achieve that, it's important that we work with them and figure out ways to get them to there. That's the difference that really needs to be made, is guys, we have guys that can't get there. So we work with them and give them what we call a prescription for health and figure out ways to improve their cardiovascular shape through diet, through exercise, whatever it may take, to get them to that. Because it's like you spend 25 years of your career in the fire service, and that's what you know. It would be really a shame, unless there was some type of, you know, bad medical issue that came up or whatever. All of a sudden, a guy can't make that, and it's like, we don't want to see that gentleman's career go away, if anything. He's full of knowledge and training. We want to enhance that because that's important to the department. So it's like we've got to help these guys along the way.
Absolutely. And then you talked about your VO2 mask.
Max. Oh, the mask. Yes.
Yeah, sorry.
There's
VO2
a max.
Max mask.
Right.
So you talked about it being Bluetooth and then doing some calculations. What do you happen to know the brand of the mask or the system that you use? And then does it only measure... sorry, as a follow-up, does it only measure the VO2 max, or are you doing the actual gas exchange measurements?
Right now, we're concentrating on the VO2 max. It does other things, but it also, we realized, there, you know, it's kind of like we realized that there's limitations, there's time, there's money limitations, there's all these things. We have to balance out the program to make it the most value for the fireman and the firefighter and the department. So we, go ahead.
The brand is VO2 Master.
Okay.
And we, because we really stress the firefighter up to 100% of his ability, most fire departments don't have firemen that physically fit, if truth be told, we all know that. So we are very targeted because it is an expensive, more expensive test, and it goes outside of the recommendations for NFPA.
Uh-huh.
NFPA just says, you know, do the Bruce protocol, take them up to 85%. With the mask, you take them all the way to 100% because you want to get that maximum, how physically fit are you? So we're really specific with the health of the firefighter per department. So right now we have two fire departments that are participating in this. We do a lot of attributes, we do a lot of studies, we do a lot of analytics just to kind of help justify, number one, the cost. I'm Mexican, so I'm talking loud. We're able to justify the cost and then also evaluate the assessment of the department as a whole and also the firefighter to see if they're improving in their health or if they're, you know, declining. So we use it really as a benefit.
And
awesome.
Then our health and wellness coach can actually take that information. She takes that information, the VO2 max information, through the mask, and then also the molecular body scanner that we use that measures the fat and the skeletal muscle mass, your BMI, all those factors, and their general appearance is a big one too. They take all those factors, and from that, they can come up with a game plan on how to improve their health and wellness associated with cardiovascular health.
Awesome. So, and then
it's a really all-encompassing thing.
I love it. My very last question for that is, so you have the mask to give you the VO2 max. Are you using the calculation, the formula, parallel to that, taking an average of that? Do you know what the percentage is in difference?
We haven't done enough research on that. We are collecting that data now. That's an excellent question. We asked that same thing when we started doing it with the mask, and we're calculating all that right now. We don't have a big enough sample size yet to say, you know, the mask is so much more effective, or it, you know, it's way different or whatever. We don't have that data in yet.
If you don't mind me jumping in real quick, I know that there are studies that have already been done that show that the actual maximal test is more accurate than the submaximal test using the formula and calculations. And so a lot of that data, I can't quote it off the top of my head, I apologize, but a lot of that data already exists for y'all to reference. And so I know that as a department that started out using the submaximal assessment and transitioned to the maximal assessment, we've seen the same thing, that it is a more accurate reading.
Of course.
And so I know some of that data does exist already for you.
Of course. And again, we have to weigh that out with the department to see if that there's added cost because there's other factors involved in using that mask,
right,
like the filters and everything associated with the time, the person who runs it. All that has to be calculated and determine what's the best value for the department. We discuss that ahead of time and say, you know, here are the options. This is what we suggest, but ultimately you're the ones paying this bill, right?
Right.
So we've got to follow directions of our customer.
Yep.
And then on a follow-up on that, we are also working with two fire departments that are going to be tied in to A&M. we're going to be doing studies with that. So we are on the beginning doing, like this one department that has about 200 in sample, we're going to be doing all of them. We're going to be doing the regular Bruce protocol with an approximate VO2 max calculation, and then we're going to be doing them with an actual mask to get the actual one. We want to see what is the difference.
Yeah, like you were talking
about.
Yeah. Right. And I've seen those studies,
yes.
And it's like, okay, I got to see this for myself. Right.
I know the new NFPA standard also lists both the treadmill and the bike protocol.
Right.
Are y'all utilizing both, or are you just utilizing the treadmill?
Well, you say that. We just looked at buying a bike.
Okay.
So
And there's also the rower, so we're aware of that.
Okay.
Yeah, we're trying to make it what's best for the department. Yeah.
Thank you.
Stop talking, I promise.
No, thank you so much.
Excellent. And so I wanted to, like, in full disclosure, it's not a sales pitch for them or anything. It's just I think that there's a few matters in the legislature this year that could affect exactly that and departments' compliance with the 1500 physicals. And so for my project of cardiac health, I intend to I was going to use some of their data, but I'm also going to use, it sounds like, some of Ashley Watson's data, and Adam Story's going to get a phone call. But I thought that was a unique way to kind of incorporate as what we saw as a material weakness of our committee. We are deep in resources just in our vendors that we can lean on to say, hey, can you show me some of the backside of what's going on? And then we can help build stories for departments of why they should do this. We can build stories for the firefighters on how they should use the results. And I'm with a department that does a bike protocol now. We're looking at other options as we speak just to see what the options are. So anyway, I thought that was interesting. Anything else for number four before we move on? Very good. Looks like Grace is up. Are you presenting on the injury report?
Yeah, let's read that agenda item.
Oh, item number five, review and discussion of the injury report.
Okay, yes. Can you hear me?
No.
It doesn't appear that it's working.
That one doesn't seem to be working.
And the cord's not long enough.
It's not connected. It's not working. I touched it. Technical difficulties. Okay.
We're gotcha. Good
now. Okay. All right, good morning. I'm Grace Wilson. I'm the Public Information Officer here at the Commission. And one of my duties is to be the administrator for the injury reporting program. And that also requires me to do the annual injury report each year. So now the commission hasn't looked at it yet for this report, which is a 2024 report. And so they haven't kicked it over to you. You don't have any official capacity to be reviewing it and offering recommendations at this time. I would suspect that they will at their May meeting. After they review it, they'll probably want some other input as to what kind of recommendations they need to provide for the fire service. So today, I offer the injury report to you guys, and you'll probably want to digest it a little bit and kind of go through it over the next coming months or whatever until your next meeting. And during that time, perhaps the commission will direct you to actually review it and look at it and come up with some recommendations. So, I'm trying to keep it brief. What do y'all have you had a chance to review it yet at all? Pretty a little bit, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll just tell you from my perspective, nothing really jumped out at me too much this year as particularly troubling or worrisome. It seemed like kind of the same sort of data that we've been getting. The COVID-19 stuff has been gradually falling, so we're seeing a lot less of injuries, in quotation marks, doing like administrative duties and things like that, whereas, you know, in the past few years we've had it up in thousands even. So that's slowly coming down as expected. But other than that, it seems like we're kind of at, you know, a normal level of injuries, and I'm not unhappy with how it looks. I think that by getting a larger percentage of injuries from things like fitness and training and stuff like that. Like, that's where we should be, and having less on the fire ground. I don't know. That's kind of my take on it, but what do y'all think?
Adam?
I have had an opportunity to review it, and I've noted a lot of the same things. I've made some kind of some summation and notes that I'll give when we get to the committee assignment reports. But I did want to take the opportunity to thank you for the extensive time and work that it obviously takes to put this together. I didn't realize when I signed up for this as an assignment that it would be so much simpler based on the report that you produce, and so I really appreciate that. I think the only question I had maybe was, would it be possible to show, and on page four, it lists the total number of associated individuals in the database. I would be curious to help in comparison with previous year's numbers to see the growth in the fire service in the state of Texas, so that we can see if it correlates with an increase. Because as we have more firefighters, we're more likely to have more injuries than previous years. And so that would be the only thing that I think would maybe help us a little bit, is to have a comparison of the numbers of actual associated firefighters from year to year, mm-hmm. so that we could correlate that with the rise or fall of some of the injury categories.
Okay, I think I can definitely get that number for last year. I don't know how many years back I can go with that number.
Okay.
Because we didn't always include it in the injury report. We did last year. We came up with this more detailed list of stuff like that. But I can definitely get the number from last year, and I'll just see what I can get.
And I think moving forward, too, would be helpful
for
the correlation.
No, that's a great idea.
Okay. Other than that, thank you for fantastic work on this report.
Adam, if I can ask you a question real quick, just to clarify, you're just looking at the first number. Today it says 40,888 for the number of associated individuals in the database.
That's correct.
That's the number you want?
Yes, sir.
So we ought to be able to do that. We've always had that particular, our total number of
I think folks. Cliff might have something to say about that, but I was thinking when I look in the database, I could see how many we have right now. I don't know if I could say how many could we have in, 2020.
We can go back through the report. We'll work on it.
Okay.
We can get that's going to be easy to accomplish.
Yeah, that's a good point to see if there's a correlation in that growth. And just real quick, I know Anderson's got a question here, but I've met with probably half of the committee one on one working on individual projects, and when Adam and I met, it was literally in the Hilton parking lot leaving Waco last week, and he's like, there's not much I can do because Grace has done such a good job with that report. And I hate to sound like a broken record, but I know, for the first year of this committee, you and I and a couple of really brainiac interns I had worked on that, and you have not let off the gas since then. That report just gets better and better every year. And I know that that's hard to do with everything else you're doing. I want to make sure that you know how much we appreciate that. So, Anderson?
The only kind of questions I had following up were, do we have a way to cross-reference some of the categories between stuff correlating? Like, one was like the burns, what stuck out, hands and that, or hands and ears. So do we capture different types of incidents, wildland versus structural? And then also like correlations between some of the other injury types. Are there other correlations that are deeper dive or is that like down the road? Because I mean, where we started and where we're at is really good. So
yeah, I mean, we can always go deeper. It's just, yeah, I mean, it can be done. We have to think about, like, I don't know, is it worth doing? I don't know.
From a guy that used to enter the reports, I know I'm also kind of laying that out as
right.
it's more information to put in and enter and such too. So,
let me say this, because the injury report has changed, or the injury reporting user interface in FIDO has changed as of January 1st of this year. Now, up until January 1st of this year, we collected all kinds of stuff. All kinds of data. And yes, you probably could tell if it was a wildland incident versus a structural firefighting incident versus a car fire or whatever. However, going forward, we decided we had a lot of meetings about it, and we thought about like what was really useful to the fire service in general as a whole, and we did cut out. We did stop gathering a lot of the really deep, nitty-gritty, getting down into the details stuff like that. So I do believe that we collect certain different types of injuries, like differentiating between a structure fire versus, I don't know, a wildland fire, for example. But some of that ability to look into the details is disappearing. Just FYI.
Thank you.
Anything else? Ashley?
Yeah, I guess just to piggyback on that, I had asked this back in our very first meeting, but I'm not sure that you were here to really give that answer this well. If it is a topic, let's just say like hand burns, that we wanted to really dive deep into before we were able to give a sufficient recommendation, is there that ability to, like, I know that's not something that you necessarily want to add on to here, just to add more detailed information, but if it was a specific topic that we wanted to go deeper into to be able to give a better recommendation, is that possible?
Right, yes. I think with burns, that's kind of like a special category, and our compliance department does a lot of investigations into burn injuries. So they are gathering all the details, all the data and stuff like that. So I think that we have it, and we can go more in-depth into that.
So to Grace's point, in the regional meetings, what we're hearing is, like, there's a record number of investigations going on. And it's not that there's more injuries, per se. It's under direct Chief Wisco, the push is to find root causes more. And so I think, like, we can use her report to see how we might be able to interface with those investigations. And so can you speak to that?
Yeah,
like, there's something we've never even considered.
I'll speak to that because I want to add to some of that. So we've refined the reporting process. If any of you have done an injury report since January, it's easier. We got battalion chiefs in Metro cities telling us they're doing them on their cell phones while they're sitting in their truck. All right, they happen. They go in and do it. It takes them less than 5 minutes. We did that on purpose. We have seen for 3 years now a steady and somewhat sharp increase in burn injuries. So we're drilling down on that. I can tell you while we're sitting here today, we've got 67 open injury investigations going on. We're only investigating the burn injuries. If you look at these numbers, while the overall number of injuries for 24 are down, and we see that, and it's been a decline since 22, our fire ground burns are continuing to go up. We saw a 20% increase from 22 to 23. I don't think it's going to be quite 20% this time, but they're still up. So compliance is taking those injury reports when they come into the system. They're initiating an investigation. They're doing some preliminary over-the-phone questions. A couple things, ring the bell. They ask them to secure the gear. We send one anywhere from one to, we've had as many as five out looking at some of these. The other piece of it is we're also tying in the State Fire Marshal's office for any critical burn injuries at the beginning, because if it does unfortunately result in an LODD down the road, it's going to be harder for the Fire Marshal's office, who handles those investigations, to start recreating some of that. So we're bringing them early on. Even on the LODDs, we're going with the Fire Marshal's office now. Compliance is handling the technical firefighting aspect. The Fire Marshal's office is investigating the overall event and the circumstances and all of that. So we're trying to grow and better capture how we're getting burned, because there's a problem. And we've all got theories. Compliance has two great theories working. One, it's a PPE issue. We all struggled. Everybody saw the struggle getting PPE during the COVID period and the supply chain issues. So one theory is they started taking whatever they could get. Well, I'm going to pick on Pflugerville, not because it happened there. Just I'm looking at Michael. They probably have a set garment requirement spec for what they want their gear to reach. And they probably couldn't get that for a period of time. But they needed the gear because NFPA and Texas state law says it's only good for 10 years. So they had gear they had to replace. They started taking whatever they could get because they wanted to be compliant with 1851 and the state law. Well, that TPP level might have decreased. The individual firefighter was used to a certain level of protection. Now they don't have that. They're going the same distance into these fires, and nobody wants them to stop putting out fires. I'll be the first to say that. But they're going where they've been able to go before, and they're getting burned. So we're trying to understand that. That's one theory. Maybe it truly is related to the supply chain issue. Theory number two, this isn't going to be a surprise to anybody in this room. There is a mentality today of the hell with the safety stuff. Everybody deserves a search. Everybody deserves a fireman to curl up next to them and die. All right? And I say that, and that's a pretty harsh statement, but damn it, that's what they're doing. And we need to understand that. We need to figure out where the problem is. Is it the level of protection from the gear, or is it the over-aggressiveness and the disregard for, you know what, there's really no reason to be here at this point, because anybody in here, if I'm not surviving it fully protected, nobody's going to survive it. So we're trying to get a better handle on that. I don't want to keep that debate going. I want to put an end to that debate, but we don't have the statistics yet, and we're working on that. So you're going to see a lot more, and back to the question about specifics on burns or specifics on wildland, I think as these burn injuries get investigated, we're going to be able to ultimately tie those back to these injury reports, and we're going to be able to eventually produce an injury report that breaks that down, the burn injuries, and that's what our focus is on right now. Station duties, fitness injuries, you're always going to have those. And I grew up in the fire service at a time when it was dangerous to go to fires and it was pretty safe to be in the firehouse. 20 and 21, we saw those numbers flip. Now it was safer to be at the fire than it was to be in the fire station. That's a company officer and a discipline issue. Something happened. And we're trying to figure out why all of a sudden it became more dangerous to be at the fire again. Rightly so, but something's gone wrong. Our numbers have gone the opposite direction at a high rate of speed. So we're really taking a hard focus on why is that. We want to understand that. So I think as the years go by, we're going to see a lot more material in these injury reports that are specific. We had this many burn injuries. This many were critical. Here's what they were. It was a hand injury from a wildland event, or it was a structure collapse, or whatever it was. You know, we're trying to dive into that. But with 60-something open investigations right now, it's a struggle. We're getting there.
If I could say something real quick, I think we all like the streamlined injury reporting, and I think that will help with people actually reporting versus right. Not. I think the main concern would just be that we can eventually get that data when it's tied back in with what's reported online versus what the investigators find, and then the committee has that data available to peruse and make recommendations sure. Out of.
So and it really came thing. Down to how are we gonna eat this elephant one bite at a time. Well, we need to get more data in. We need to get better specific data in, and we probably need to do a better job investigating the ones that are alarming. The alarming ones, obviously, are the burn injuries or the fire gun related ones. So that's where our focus is. That doesn't mean we're not going to expand out from there, but we want to get good at that, and then we can start focusing on the other stuff. So I do think. Well, everything you guys have said, and I've been saying it for years, Grace does an amazing job compiling this every year, and every year we throw another nugget at her, and she makes it work. So hats off to that. We're trying to turn this around and make it something that really is useful, and we can tell the real story and drill down on what the real problem is. I'll tell you this, too. The compliance division has really grown their relationships with the manufacturers, with NIOSH, with the CDC, I mean, with all these folks. And when they see things out there during their investigations, they're bringing the manufacturers in. They're having those conversations. At their quarterly training that they do, the manufacturers are coming in and teaching them more about the specifics of the protective equipment out there and what to look for when they're finding injuries related to them. So we're trying to become a lot more technically skilled in that. It's just going to take a little time.
Very good. Any other questions about the injury report? All right. Moving on. Agenda item number 6, review and discussion of prior committee work and accomplishments. Any discussion on prior work? All right. Well, I can tell you we have – maybe it's a question for Frank King, your legal counsel. We have set up – I have set up – so if it's wrong, it's I did it – a Teams channel. Some of us have been able to access it, and I think we're still struggling to get a few – I don't think we've – you're in now, okay. But it's through my employer's network, Microsoft Teams, and we're using that to – well, we will begin using that for additional collaboration. Is that legal? Not really open to just anybody.
Are you making any decisions? Is there any voting, any policy being made, or is it just discussion?
Information sharing.
Okay. No, that's perfectly legal. As long as you're not doing an official vote or, you know, any official policy, it's fine to have Teams meetings to discuss that.
All right, perfect. And so along those lines, that in relation to this prior committee work, that Teams channel's up, and I'm going to be pulling all of the work of the committee previous to kind of this reboarding, and I'll put the previous work in the appropriate channel or Teams channels. So if you're working on cancer for Homer, I'm going to put the cancer work that we previously did, so it's kind of libraried in one place. And then at some point, if it becomes more appropriate to put it in a state place, I'm guessing we can move it pretty easy for somebody more tech-savvy than me.
We can certainly have those conversations with those smart people. Yeah. They'll help us. They'll make it work.
I mean, if I figured it out. All right, good deal. Any other discussion on number 6? Perfect. Moving on. Status updates. Item number 7, status updates and progress reports from the assigned project work groups, and we're going to start with the sleep project, which O'Neill is one. O'Neill and Green are the members there.
Yes, thank you. So I gave everybody a sheet. You should have some of the data. So I talked to Steve a little bit early on. What I ultimately did was I went through a lot of the literature on sleep, and obviously there's a huge breadth of studies on sleep, but I tried to focus mostly on the fire service, obviously. So there are two kind of main studies that I thought were critical to consider. One was by Joel Billings, who specifically studies sleep in the fire service. He's out at Embry-Riddle University. His study, you can see, showed 30% of firefighters suffer from some form of diagnosable sleep disorder. There's a large study done by Harvard Medical School, Barger. You can see there the second bullet point, showing that 37 to 40% of 7,000 firefighters studied over 66 departments showed positive sleep dysfunction. 80% didn't even know they had it, right? It's because we come into this profession young, we're used to that schedule, and we just think that's normal life. So by the time you're in your 40s and 50s, it's really become detrimental to your health. So that's the prevalence of sleep disturbances. Those are kind of the two main studies that I wanted to highlight. So what are the consequences of that, right? Well, sleep's more than just closing your eyes and getting some sleep. There's, I believe, 5 stages of sleep, and you must get all of them to be completely rested and for your brain to be able to do the things that it needs to do. So even if you're at the fire station, maybe not even making runs at night, and I think most of us that have been in the fire service know that at the fire station, regardless, you don't sleep as well. Your brain is not actually getting the rest it truly needs. So sleep disorders are positively associated with cardiovascular disease, diabetes, depression, anxiety, cancer. Shift work, the International Association of, it's IARC. It's on cancer. It's through the World Health Organization. It says that shift work is a group 2A carcinogen, meaning it likely causes cancer because of the sleep dysfunction. So Joe Billings and Sprague did some studies on the different shift schedules. They didn't really study 2472, but it's pretty much, because not a lot of people have it, but it's pretty much going to be considered the best schedule for sleep. Obviously, more time off, the better. But the ones that it did study were the 2448, 4896, and then the Kelly Day. Kelly Day was considered the worst for sleep and recovery. 2448 was considered better than 4896, but it's debatable just by how much. More studies really need to be done on that. Peterson, through an article on Firehouse, and this was also mentioned, I think, by Joe Billings, and not something officially studied, that a pragmatic view of the schedules, and a lot of departments have a trouble making wholesale changes to their schedules, may consider changing their relief times from early mornings. So instead of relieving at 7 in the morning, if you put your mind to it, if you're coming into work at 7 in the morning where you're getting up very early that shift, that day before your shift, and then if you're making a run at 3, 4 in the morning, you're likely not to go back to sleep because you're waiting for your relief. But if you push that relief time later in the morning, you know, 9, 10, 11, you sleep in the day you come to work, and you also can sleep in before you get relieved. So overall, not necessarily studied, but believed by the researchers to be a pragmatic solution to not wholesale changes to the schedules. So some common recommendations, of course, are education. So this is a lot of times it's cultural change. When I came in 24 years ago, if you took a nap during your shift, you're kind of lazy. Times have changed. Firefighters are called upon more and more for the communities. They should be expected to have bad nights and should be expected to be able to take care of their health and sleep when they can. Optimizing circadian rhythms with taking into account the data so far on shift schedules to try to get the best one for your department. Of course, resources, money, that all plays a part of this depending on the department. Elimination of unnecessary nighttime tones. So in my department, we recently stopped our wake-up tones. Forever we had wake-up tones that would go off early in the morning to wake firefighters up just because that's what we like to do, and there was no real basis for it, so we stopped doing that. Then improving the sleep environment. So dark, cool. In order for you to go to sleep, I believe you have to drop your brain temperature a couple degrees. That's why it's easier to sleep in a cool environment, harder to sleep in a hot environment. Some municipalities, departments may control the temperature in some fire stations and may not allow it to get to a necessary temperature, so that could be an issue. Strategic napping, taking downtime to nap throughout the shift at certain times. There are some identified times, I don't have them here, that are more beneficial to a natural circadian rhythm. And that's pretty much the heart of what I've gathered when it comes to the existing research. There's not a lot of specific research on firefighters. There's still quite a bit emerging.
All right. Any questions for O'Neill?
I know you referenced the SPROG 2023 study right below the Billings and Fott 2016 one. There is a study done by Billings in he and then Haddock and Sarah Janke did one in 2022 that really kind of offsets exactly what his 2016 data says, that 4896 produced over 100 hours more per year of sleep. So I agree with you when you say it likely warrants more studying and data collection in that, only because it's such a hot topic right now.
Yeah, it's and that's why I put that note there, because yeah. The other study contradicted it. But there was some contradiction within the study itself. That it showed that as a consistent recovery, the 2448 was better, but then over time, 4896 was better. Maybe that's because of vacation.
Yes, short-term versus long-term fatigue.
So maybe you get more time off with vacation in that schedule. I'm not sure. But
it's interesting. Interesting stuff. So I work at my new department is a four-shift department and with no Kelly Day. So it's one-on, one-off, one-on, five-off. And they're pushing me for 48, 144. And I'm like, we're buying a rested workforce, and you want us to trade that away? I gave you the 48, but it comes with a 96, not a 144. So, like, it's an interesting, and it's funny, like you point out, like the research, the same researcher disagrees with his previous research. So that always calls into question. That's good stuff. You have a plan on how you might disseminate this, or what's your plan to make this useful to the Texas Fire Service?
Yeah, so, you know, I don't have a specific plan right now. It's more gathering the science that's there, and every fire department's going to have their challenges. Every department has different abilities to change their schedules or not, their resources. I think just offering the data for administrators to look at and know and be educated about, and then giving some recommendations for departments. So, for example, change in relief times, I think, is something that's not extremely difficult to achieve, but can have some benefits. But noting that there isn't really any studies on it. It just seems very logical.
Good deal. Thank you. Next is nutrition, and one of two projects that Ashley has, big projects that Ashley has bit off. You get my pun there? Nutrition, bit off.
Oh, that was funny, yes. I'm actually going to tie both of mine together because it was relatively the same outline. So there's a four-page handout, front and back, because, you know, why have one page? Okay, so I tried to address each of the five things that you had laid out, Chief Booker, from last time. So for the first portion of that is, what is our end goal? So for hormones, our end goal would be to implement some form of an educational and potential even maybe testing program to help firefighters identify and manage hormone imbalances, because these affect so heavily into performance, recovery, sleep, mental health, and even cancer and disease in the body. And then for nutrition, that would look like implementing also, again, an educational platform to help firefighters in Texas identify and implement quality nutrition choices in an effort to decrease fatigue, reaction times, long-term health issues, which also does include hormones, and ultimately decrease the risk of LDDs in the fire service. So four program steps. Man, and like he said, like this is a pretty vast thing to kind of like wrap our brains around. Some of the things that I kind of came up with is website education links, like we had talked about, creating maybe a web page, maybe something that is app based that could even transition into wearables and data collection. I mean, everybody has some kind of a Garmin or Apple Watch or an Aura Ring or a Fitbit. You know, there's endless amounts of wearables, which I think that once you begin that lifestyle of your own data collection and tracking, you become very invested in it. If there was, you know, the apps that all integrate together that show this is where you were, this is your sleep, this is your performance for the day, this incorporates your workout, etc. So coming up with some form of a referenceable, and, you know, maybe we just start with a website at this point, a link to have some education for that. Creating a guide for each of those, for hormone and nutrition, and then differentiating male and female hormones. I hate women's hormones because they're absurd. They change every week. I know you all husbands are like, yes, preach. One of the biggest...
I just want to go on record. Not my wife. She is completely predictable.
She is so stable. Yes, noted.
There you go, saying something stupid.
Yeah, I don't blame you there. It is something that I have kind of this land I've traversed on my own, you know, like postpartum, having a baby, and everything's changing. Being in the fire service for, you know, going on like 18 years, I've seen the change from when it was no big deal for me to lay down for a 15-minute nap, and now
you know, if I'm up at 4 o'clock, that's the end of it. And I've heard guys go through this too. I specifically understand like why the medical research has said we're only going to do things on male testing, because it's so, you know, it's a 24-hour cycle, and women are just so all over the place. Obviously, that since more women are in the fire service now, it's something that we need to look at. And I'm learning just through myself and some other clients how vast of a difference hormones can make. So just to kind of move past that, but creating within the program maybe some partnerships or referrals, things that we could do. You know, I don't want to be the one, and you know, Chief O'Neill, I'm sure he doesn't want to be the same thing on this, like the sleep program. We're not the scientists. We're not the researchers. I don't want to be the person that collects all the data and puts all this together when other people have done that. And, you know, creating these professional relationships with these people to have that stuff done, just like this Crackle magazine, Science Alliance. I mean, they have tons and tons of data. So gathering all that, creating these links to be able to push out that information, is kind of where I think I'm going to go with that. And then I am more of a speak to the masses type of person, because there are so many people who are invested in this fire service wellness movement, but it's, you know, extremely time consuming to go speak at this department on A and B and C shift, and then, you know, you bring in D shift at that point. Mm-hmm. And so if we were able to open this up to a bigger workshop, a symposium, a conference, something like that, would be, you know, hit 400 people in one speech kind of thing. And then link them, obviously, to whatever platform we go with. And then a big education portion on hormones and both hormones and nutrition. And there's every way you can go with that. There's paleo, there's keto, there's carnivore, there's low carb, there's high protein, high carb. And I think that what I will have to do here is come back down to the science of whole food, and you can adjust as accordingly, whatever meets your needs and works best for you. As far as for the hormones, there, we're talking about VO2 max testing. There is a lot of discussion. You know, are we pro-hormone therapy? Or are we against hormone therapy? How does it affect your VO2 max? How does it affect polycythemia? And you get increased levels of HNH in your blood, and now you can't oxygenate your body. So all of this has to be done fairly strategically to not say, yes, everybody on testosterone, let's just all get crazy. But to say, hey, if you have completely destroyed through the lack of sleep, and stress your adrenal glands, and now you have poor thyroid health, and now you have poor hormone production, and now you've set yourself up for you know, low levels of glutathione, and now you end up with disease, and then you get cancer, and then you have mental health problems because your hormones are out of whack. There's strategy to this, and it's just a big muddy pit to wade through currently. But that all has to somehow get pushed out and incorporated into this. Another big piece of that, I think, needs to be education on the portion of how to correctly test and balance hormones. Because most clinics, these little pop-up shops, are just saying, yeah, here you go. I hope that your testosterone total is 2,000 next week. And good luck. And tell your wife I'm sorry. And, you know, it's creating like these, not to say roid rage, but these firemen who are just completely roller coastered, which also affects your mental health. So that's going to, the education portion is huge. And I think that that is why it's going to have to be more of a broadcasted thing to hit as many people as we can, in one thing. On nutrition, there is tons. I know, Chief Anderson is involved in some of the stuff with the National Fallen Firefighters, that they have things listed for nutrition-specific things. There's
a girl out of the Northeast. I know Pflugerville uses as well. She has all of this stuff laid out. And, you know, to, as to not reinvent the wheel, I think a partnership with someone like her in that realm is, you know, she's done the back work on this stuff. So why would I go try to re-implement that and recreate it? all right, so that's all there for your reading pleasure. And then number three, timeline, at minimum a 12-month time frame, I would have to say, just with the amount of information that is involved in education in this. And it's broken down into quarters, theoretical quarters, obviously. But research and planning and partnerships, education and awareness launches, the conferences. I know Pflugerville, again, is hosting a health and wellness symposium in September. That might be something that, you know, if we're not able to present it, at least we have a presence there. And just say, hey, look, TCFP has this health and wellness committee. This is a big thing. Other health and wellness workshops or conferences that are across the state. Self-assessment tools, like we were talking about, the data tracking and wearables. Any type of testing and data collections. There's a House bill right now that's looking at specifically data collection for female firefighters versus female gen pop. And, you know, if like that information gets out there, that's awesome. We can just use that more. and then going over and evaluating everything that we have, and then eventually maybe that does look like a policy consideration for a department or the state, to where we can say, here's all the information after a couple of years. What does this look like for a wellness policy for, you know, that specific department? Or at least giving them some form of a template that maybe they can utilize. Number four on page four, how will we know if we're successful? So to measure success, we will have to have qualitative and quantitative data. We're going to have measurements somehow, and that may be just self-reported data, like behavioral and physical health improvements. How are the firemen... firefighters like addressing this stuff? Do they think it's stupid and they hate it and everything sucks? Or are they saying, hey, we really do see the benefit of this stuff? I think since the 1580 is coming out and has, you know, changed some of those requirements with VO2 max and the METs, that has kind of just pushed that wellness movement up even more, where guys are...
I'm sorry, I just realized we had the wrong person make your copies. We're only seeing your odd pages.
Oh.
I'm like, why am I stupid here? What am I missing?
I think it's single copy versus double page.
Yeah. So if you could just speak to the odd information.
Yeah, that's fine. Gotcha. Well, that's okay. We'll get it to you.
You got a 50.
Yeah. I will get it corrected later. So for how will we know if we're successful, that is going to have to be ultimately data collection. It can be self-reported, you know, data collection from these things, just like the House bill, surveys. It could be data trends. It could be collecting the data that these annual physical providers have. You know, just, I mean, that's, it's pretty... blanketed information. It's not HIPAA at that point. You just say, how many guys are you having? Is this improving? Has the trend of 4896 improved anything? You know, do you have data to show that? Or has it made it worse? And then Chief O'Neill can just write his own paper on that. And that'll be good. And then just creating a firehouse culture shift. That's going to have to be a big thing in my specific station that has significantly happened. The culture shift is a thing. In my time, just in my city, we have gone from, you know, we don't even talk about health and wellness to now it's a significant portion of what we do. And then we could also look even at, like, sick leave. Are we having less instances of sick and injury-related things? And then what is causing that? And really tie that back to the injury report. And then number five, is this an education or a rule? So both programs would have to begin as educational platforms. It's pretty difficult to develop a rule for personal wellness, but you can develop a standard as a minimum for the fire service. So I think that's probably going to have to be where we have the rule portion of it, the standard, is to say, you know, hey, this is what we want to go after. And I know the House Bill 2009 talking about making annual physicals mandatory and things like that might be something that we kind of attach to and mold and shape as we see fit to implement with this. Policy implementation for a department, et cetera. And then, since you don't have this page, so key areas to address. That would be stress and cortisol regulation, talking just about how, you know, the education on stress and cortisol, how that factors into your adrenal glands and thyroid, and then ultimately hormones, specifically testosterone for men, and then everything for the female. How that plays into like glutathione production. I just read a study about this yesterday. But how if you have higher levels of stress, then you end up with lower levels of glutathione, which is your most prominent detoxifier in your body. So essentially, you're not detoxing as well, setting yourself up for higher levels of toxins, which if you go on many fires, then you end up with that. And then that only leads you to a closer rate of disease, and then obviously closer to cancer. Talking about TRT, how it affects the blood cells, the effect on VO2 max, roller coasters of emotion, fatigue with thyroid function and metabolism, making sure that we're not just testing like just a TSH and free T level, like we're really getting a big panel on these things, looking at the whole picture, metabolic health and disease prevention, insulin sensitivity and blood sugar regulation, performance nutrition, and then fire station food culture. What does that look like? How do we create that? And then how do nutrition and hormones affect the fire service from an employer's perspective? Because those are the people that we will have to get on board. Firemen, like, they can be on board all they want, but if you cannot convince administration to, you know, help go that direction, then it really defeats the purpose. And then where that comes in would be cognitive function, decision making. You know, what is your recovery time on scene, injuries, retention and career longevity, job performance and safety, long-term health costs. Obviously, we don't want guys, we don't want to set them up for failure, give them cardiovascular disease, and then send them out on the fire ground. And insurance and healthcare costs, and productivity and team readiness. So that is to answer your five questions. It's a massive amount of information, but it did cover two topics. So.
Well, no, it's a ton of information, and I felt like, I think inadvertently you kept pointing at me, especially on the nutrition topics. I had this idea as you were talking, and I wrote it down like a big question mark. How do we participate? How do we partner our committee with all these conferences? You were talking about conferences. I'm like, why aren't we presenting? Instead of using the website and coming to the quarterly meetings, why don't we just have try and create a standing invitation to all of these conferences for sessions and on your nutrition, your hormone project? That's going to be a multi-year potentially project. How cool would that be to lay that out in all these conferences and just in real time? Like, this is where it's at. Mm-hmm. So that by the time you have a product, you'll have at least some willing participants waiting for the product instead of having to try and hard sell it at that point.
And it got skipped over. It's probably on an even page. But there are some there are some universities. I know, like, she had spoke to A&M, Texas Tech. Yeah, Science to the Station, Texas A&M, and Texas Tech are the most local on the research development teams. I know Texas Tech is huge into firemen's health, specifically as a college student research, and I'm sure A&M is as well. I mean, they're doing the work on that stuff. Like, we just need to be the ones that gather it. IFF, we have utilized, for my city, we've utilized them for the peer fitness trainer
But they also have the platform of like the wellness fitness initiative. And I mean, that stuff is already out there. Like, why? If we align with that and we like it, well, partnership at that point. But yes, I love conferences. I think the fire service right now is extremely conference driven, and you know that could be whatever we want it to look like.
I'll just be honest, I consider myself an extremely average firefighter. When you brought up hormones in the first meeting, I'm like, not sure where she's going with this. I've learned more about hormones just because you sparked my interest. So I've listened to a few podcasts. And you talk about the sleep-deprived person. I woke up at 3:30 this morning and said, well, I guess I'm going to head to Austin. And then I'm so exhausted, I take a one-hour nap at Bucky's because I just don't sleep. So I'm listening to a hormone podcast as I'm driving up here. So like you, there's got to be more people like me in the fire service that like I'm very eager to see what you're doing. Any questions for Ashley?
Chief, yes, can I make a statement? Ashley, thanks for jumping off with the beginning of our meeting with the most profound explanation there. I think it really highlights how interconnected all the topics that we've all kind of chose are. And as we really look at education and initiatives to attack prevention for these, the ability to take these topics and be able to speak about them in the new sense that all the research has given, and be able to put it out and interrelate them. So what Ashley talked about was how it affects cardiovascular health, metabolic syndrome, which, something else we've been talking about offline, sleep, behavioral health, mental stress. And, you know, this is just one of the topics, but every one of the topics that we lay out will be doing the same. So appreciate the effort and the desire to throw that out there and knowing how some of it's going to be thrown back at us, at our face.
Just turn my head.
Maybe just a real quick statement also. To kind of piggyback on what you said, Chief Boker, most of us go to the Texas Fire Chief conferences and other conferences across the country, and at every conference there's discussions now about mental health, health and wellness programs, VO2 max, but what we're not hearing about at these conferences is hormone imbalances and how they correlate to everything else that we're talking about. And so knowing that we have some people tied in directly with the Texas Fire Chiefs group, I think it would be a fantastic topic to try and include moving forward and watch it grow as part of the overall health and wellness initiatives.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, Teeks extended their speakers deal, and I'll commit, like, I'm going to throw some names in the in the application, but the application period, the speaker application is still open. I'll commit to putting that in there for the committee, and we'll figure out what we're going to talk about by January.
Yeah.
But I know some people that probably will get that speaker request a nod, even with a bare bones framework of what we're going to talk about. So, great stuff. All right, next is the cardiac health, and for the sake of time, I'm going to hit just the high points. That's my project, and my product is going to be a series of infomercials that deal with the how and why, the why we need to look at firefighter cardiac issues and the how we can do it. And so I'm focusing on three areas: the impact on the fire service with cardiac health, that it's the leading cause of firefighter fatalities. And the second aspect is testing and how to improve. So understanding what these tests are, and that kind of ties in with the presenters I asked to present, looking at the variety of tests. Because I think a lot of times I've been through firefighter physicals for 32 years, and all that mattered was the check mark fit for duty. And I'll just tell you, if this is what fit for duty looks like, we're missing something. And so trying to look at, on the cardiac side, what some of those measurements actually mean. And then the third part is just the health practices to help improve that. And that's the focus that I'm looking at on the cardiac. Any questions for cardiac? Yes, sir.
Chief, I want to remind you that I'll be happy to work on cardiac with you. I think you missed writing it down last meeting.
I'm sorry. Well, man, you're way behind that. I'm gonna take advantage of that.
Plus, he doesn't have to sleep at a Buc-ee's between here and Pflugerville. One, there's not a Buc-ee's, and two, it doesn't.
Some of my best work.
There's six
pictures. Yes, there are.
Some of my best work's in a Buc-ee's parking lot. All right. E was hormones. We've got that. Fitness. Chris Call was at Teak's Rescue Training this week, and as he was responding back to his city, became ill, and last night he sent us an email that his illness will prevent him from being here. He did send a report that he's, and I'm just going to give the abridged version. He and I talked at length two different times in the last 2 weeks that he's taken his fitness project and he's directing it towards functional fitness. And most departments have gyms, and you can move weights, and he's interested in maybe showing people how to be functionally fit and what that looks like, not just muscle heads, his term, not mine, that in increasing people's interest in being functionally fit rather than just going and doing that workout and looking at different avenues to do that. And so he's focusing on the cardiovascular endurance, the muscular strength, the flexibility, and the body composition. And so that's what he would have reported on had he not become ill late last evening. I don't have a report from Chief Muir on the mental health, and now we're to Homer Salinas with his cancer report.
Okay. The thing about the cancer I was looking at, and we're looking at, we've done a lot of good work. We had the video that we put out a couple of years back, and the drive was, have the class or that course gone to everybody, and then some time back it was approved, and this December 21st, 24th, was the completion date of them taking action against cancer in the fire service. So everybody was supposed to go ahead and take that class there. But I wanted to focus because we need to make sure that everybody's, has the opportunity to do what we taught them in that class and go about and make sure and look at the trends that if they're actually going through the process. So I went ahead and with Chief Boker, we kind of like put our heads together and we did a survey. So the best thing to do is send that survey out and see if they're actually doing what was in that class and making sure that, they have the ability. They have, is it the individual or is it the department? But, I mean, we need to structure on making sure that, we help these departments, either the culture change that they need or some more training that we need to send out there. But we need to focus on what we have. Cancer, there's so much information out there, but you pinpoint it to what causes it on us. And that's just exposure. And if most of them not doing the decon properly, doing the decon eliminates 85% of exposure to the carcinogens, and we need to focus on what we have and look at the basis and see what we need to do to help the trend on why they're not doing their decon, why they're not doing, washing their gear. I had a lot of feedback with different departments. They come in, they tell me, well, the gear is expensive, and every time you wash it, you degrade it, the actual gear itself. And then I started thinking, we have to look at something that, if they go to a car fire, if they're not exposed to the actual smoke, I mean, some departments are making them washing it, and they're degrading the gear every time they wash it. So they're going through a lot of gear, too. So the thing about it is, if they actually went into the structure fire and they come out and, do they do the proper decon? Do they do the proper procedure? So I think with this survey that we send out there and get the data, we can look to see what we can focus on what we have. And if we need to go ahead and and modify it or send more, information out there. But the cancer on updating it, there's so much information out there. The Firefighter Cancer Network, there's so many, American Cancer Society. But we did have a situation, and I was talking to Chief Boker, that the National Firefighter Registry went down. And hopefully it doesn't, I hope it's just a political thing that they bring it back. And because that is very important to look at the trends. You look at the data and see what's causing it. And I know we were mandatory to go ahead and do cancer reporting, but the National Registry had cancer reporting for retirees, for everybody. So hopefully that comes back. Hopefully it'll come back. But if it doesn't, maybe we might have to look at something that we can do to establish some kind of database there. There's different organizations that are out there that are doing the database, like ESO, when you do the reporting. I know individual departments are doing it. But basically, the survey, I'd y'all have a copy. And it's just, I wanted to keep it simple, 20 questions, this is just a rough draft. And you can look at it, and if you have any questions, anything, me and Chief are, I'm going to get in Wednesday. We're going to go ahead and put into a actual format so we can send it out to everybody. But
to that point, just to kind of get in front of your questions on it, this is a working document. We've gotten with Chief Wisco on it. Wednesday, we're going to take this and build it into an algorithm. So, Decon, does your department do it? And if the answer is yes, then we'll go down a list of, we'll take some of these questions and some additional that go down department practices. And if they answer no, it'll go straight to their individual practice. Do you do this? And if it's yes, it'll algorithm to the left. And if not, algorithm to the right. And so we'll have that done on Wednesday. I'll put it into the Teams channel so that everybody can review it. And my intention is to get Chief Wisco to sign off on it and to present it to the commissioners on May 15th for their approval to send it out. So that's kind of the, with that, you take any questions you have for Homer.
Not a question, just a recommendation for us, a slight modification to number 15 on the survey.
Okay.
I believe NFPA now requires that we inspect and wash the gear twice a year as a minimum standard, and that's not an option on here. So for a department that's compliant with NFPA, they should be washing it. They should have an option to select it twice a year and or after every fire. So I guess the only question I would have was, would you be able to select, when you set it up, would you be able to select multiple items within this?
You will now.
Yes.
Okay, perfect.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and I think we're going to use a Microsoft document so that it's very versatile. Instead of because the analytics on the backside will be more robust than SurveyMonkey.
But we want to go ahead and make that data information to everybody so everybody can look at it once we complete it. But.
Yeah, I think these questions are great. I think a lot of them are yes or no. I think some of them may be adding a sometimes or something in there, the first question, do you conduct decontamination after a structure fire? The firefighter might say, well, yes and no. Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. They won't know how to answer just a yes or no question. So a Likert scale or adding a sometimes variable in there, I don't know if that throws off your algorithm. But
well, that'd be a great algorithm because if they say sometimes, then we ask why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when do you and why don't you?
Right.
There. Yeah. Yes.
That's good. That's good. Any other questions?
What are you looking to achieve with this? What is the end goal of this?
The end goal is if they're not doing, let's say decon right after fire, we want to go ahead and educate them more why it's important.
Okay.
There's a lot of culture change. There's a lot of departments that I went to and I teach it, and then they come back and they tell me, well, the class that we're mandatory to take, we're not doing half of the stuff in there. Why you're not doing it? Well, Some are because of departments. Some are individuals that don't want to do it. So we need to focus on that. We need to educate them more if we need to do it on the individual side or the department side. You know, why is it so important, you know, to do at least the decon? That is very important, that, you know. But that's what we're looking at. We're looking at the numbers, seeing how, you know, we just need to monitor that class. And if it needs to be updated, we need to make sure that we have the proper things to update it and focus on different things that I'm looking at that are causing problems. You know, every department is different. Everybody does decon differently. They don't do it just through the video. Hey, we're going to do it like that. But every department is different. As long as they do the decon, as long as, you know, it could be different ways that they do it, but, you know.
I think one of the end goals, too, is it gives us the data to help focus our efforts. So we may think that this is the number one problem, right? But once we collect the data, it may show us something different.
Yes.
And unfortunately, I think there's still a lot of departments that don't do any of this.
Yes.
But I think it gives us, maybe if we can get everybody to participate in it, it gives us the snapshot of the state of the union of the Texas Fire Service, if you will, and really kind of help focus our efforts on what is the biggest areas for improvement.
And you know, I just don't want it to be a check off. Okay, I did that class, I check it off, and forget about it. You know, we just want to make sure that, you know, that they're actually doing it. And how can we help you know, help them along the way to complete the task?
So to Homer's credit, he was probably the first one of the committee that reached. And I'm not saying that you guys weren't doing your obviously. Ashley was working probably during the last meeting on her work, but he reached out like almost immediately and he said, hey, there's so many resources out there. And,
yes.
And I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think it really answers your question. He's like, there's so many resources out there. Like, do we really want to reinvent the wheel? How do I know what they know and what they're doing? And then we can use existing things to kind of get that in front of them wherever the greatest need is. And that's where the survey idea came from and how he started working down this idea. There's certainly an all-time, I don't want to say, I was going to say abundance. There's probably not abundance. There can never be too much information on firefighter cancer. But there's more information now available on firefighter cancer than there ever has been. And I think what Captain Salinas is trying to do is figure out where the void of knowledge is and get the right information to the people that need it.
Yeah, so I think there's a pretty large void still in survivorship. So we know with early detection and the preventative measures that we have in place that firefighters are surviving more and more, and they need to come back to work. They have families to support, and how do we support them as fire departments in that endeavor? There's not a lot of guidance there for that. And I know that's kind of another level to the cancer issue, but it may be something to add a couple questions on. Does your department provide support for people with cancer, mental health support, cancer committees, partnerships, that sort of thing?
And that's the second thing I wanted to talk about the health and wellness of, you know, getting it started in small departments, because there's some departments that, big departments that have a good health and wellness program, but the smaller departments don't have that. And maybe we can kind of push it to the smaller departments to go ahead and develop something, the health and wellness, because an individual, you know, if he gets cancer, you know, he wants to go to someone in his department and have the ability to, hey, what do I do? How do I do it? And even after, I am a cancer survivor, so I take it. And in 2017, I was diagnosed with renal cell carcinoma. It took me a while. But I ended up getting back to work, getting back on the trucks. And you're right. You know, there's a lot of people that are surviving it and want to come back to work. And, you know, and that's what I was looking at when I was, you know, I wanted to get back on the trucks. That was my goal, to get better. And, yes, you know, I needed to get back on the truck to support my family, but that was part of my life for many years, and I wanted to get back to work. And yes, we need to have that And that's like another thing that I was talking about, that we need to start developing and looking at small departments. Big departments should, you know, and I hope they help the smaller departments, because we're all one. We're all one. And we all want to go home at the end of the day. And if we can all work together, you know, get these bigger departments that have a program and teach it to the smaller program, to smaller departments, and I think we can make a bigger difference. Any other questions?
Yeah. Okay, so my first question is this is what we're, you want to send a survey, this one preferably, right, to all of the Texas fire departments, is that right?
Correct.
Can we piggyback on this as the whole health and wellness committee with our other topics somehow? Instead of sending out multiple ones?
If we have enough shovel-ready stuff, whatever you guys can produce by May 15th, and I can get him to accept, we can make a single survey, yes.
Yes.
Hey, ChatGPT can do it in about an hour.
Yeah.
Well, that
Mixer does odds and even pages.
Well, I, you know, just 50%. I think that's a really, really awesome thing that you're doing, and you obviously have a lot of passion for it, so I commend you for that, taking this on. If we, yeah, if instead of bombarding the Texas Fire Service with survey after survey after survey, if especially in a flow chart structured, you know, things open as they answer them, I mean, I'm very happy to take whatever data they have. And just so much of the study is done either internationally or in another state or something. I don't know that we have a ton of information, data collection just from Texas Fire Service specifically. So if you don't mind.
Yeah.
No, I don't mind. As long as we don't make it too long where they're like,
right,
I don't want to.
Exactly.
I don't want to. Yeah, tell it out because it's too
long. I think that's the beauty in the algorithm format, is the people who answer to the affirmative are probably more checked into it, and they're probably more apt to stick with it. Mm-hmm. And if they're not into it and they're answering no a lot, it's a quick survey and it gets them out. But at least you'll know right away that, like, there's a segment that has no interest or no knowledge.
Right.
But the ones that some of these topics, if you know stuff about it, you're doing stuff, you're probably more apt to continue the survey because you want to see if you can learn something from the survey that you're not doing. So,
or if nothing else, we, you know, if this, then click this website or email, or if you have questions further, then you direct them to whatever.
That's a great point. We can even use it as a referral tool. Good point.
And then my only other question for you is, I know that there are a significant portion of legislative bills in you know, in session right now that are looking all over firefighter cancer. Is that so, like, Flower Mound has a bill right now, and they say, well, we want additional cancers to be checked for. You know, we want more things, moving away from Flower Mound now, but we want more things on the occupational cancer list. We want more cancers checked for at three-year intervals. Is there any, or do you see yourself looking at being the person, or maybe that you could make the recommendations on what that looks like, what the best, because the bills as they're laid out, the language does not specify, well, we want to test for this. Well, how? How are you testing for that? With blood work, with sonograms, with MRIs, with what? Is that something that you see for this portion of this committee looking at for recommendations?
Maybe in the near future. Right now, we're just focusing on what we have right now. But yes, there is a lot of bills, and I talked to Linda Shields, which was with the Texas Firefighters Association, and they're pushing new. I think one is bladder, and I can't remember the rest, but I know that they're doing it. But yes, I mean, we can get this information and show it to them, and actually, hey, this is what we consider, or saying, hey, this is how we want it worded. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're very open to we have to say.
Right.
So hopefully they...
I think the fear with this influx of awareness of, you know, mental health and cancer are, seem to be the two biggest ones right now, is from the municipality or the employer side is, how much does that cost?
Yeah.
Where does the funding from that come from?
You know,
and what's the best avenue of that? If we do cancer blood tests, tumor markers on everybody, well, what's the, you know, positive and negative? You know, are you getting pertinent negatives or, you know, whatever? So,
well, I mean,
if you, you have the end of that, that'd be really cool.
Yeah. Our department, after I got with cancer, they just started putting physicals. And we had a number of people get caught early. Like it was mine. Mine was an early diagnosis. So it's important to have those physicals and make them understand that is, you know, there's a lot of firefighters that didn't want to take the physicals. They didn't want to care that they had this and they didn't want to stop working. But it's important that we educate them and tell them, you know, hey, if they can catch it early, you have a better survival rate. But yes, I agree with you.
Yeah, just being able to provide a recommendation on what the best practice is, I guess, for the cancer detection.
Just as a point of clarification, not trying to be the killjoy, just delivering a message. You're a committee at a state agency. We can't make political statements. We can't lobby on behalf of bills. We can't educate those who will be and can lobby. So I just want to make that statement that let's be careful how we build this and push it out, because it can't be coming from the Commission on Fire Protection to the legislators that here's what you need to do. We can't do that.
Yeah,
we can put it in the hands of our stakeholders, the state association, fire chief, safety, whoever, let them run with it. We can always function, this committee members can always function as resource witnesses in hearings, but we cannot tell the legislature, here's what you need to do. And you're right, what's driving all of it right now, the pushback, is who's going to pay for it, how's it going to be paid for. And if you're looking at all this that's going on, that's where all the pushback's coming from.
Yeah.
It's coming from the state side. Who's going to pay for it? How's it going to be covered?
But to that point, like I had a very, very large metropolitan fire department union reach out looking for an opinion from this committee on legislation on what constitutes a physical. And I was like, you'll have to ask the legislature.
That's right.
What is meant by those words? Like it's not our role to interpret or to push the laws before they're formed. I think once they're formed, then we help the individual departments to comply and find best practices. And even that is tricky on something when like on cancer, like what a best practice truly is. To not get caught up in, or are we the authority on truly what's best? Like, and so case in point, is the very best practice to have two sets of gear. And I come from a department; I just retired from a department that we had two sets of gear. I now work for a department that we don't. We have shelf gear that we can get people out of their dirty gear and into clean. It's truly cleaned and sized for them gear, but it's not assigned to them. And so I know that's kind of synonymous. It's semantics at this point of like, is that a second set of gear or is it not a second set of gear? It's not an assigned set of gear. But if we categorically say, you know, if you care about your people, you'll have two sets of gear, I think it puts us in a bad position when a department has effectively done something that does something very similar, but it doesn't comply with what we say. So point taken, and I trust you'll keep us on the straight and narrow as we catch our steam.
It's an interesting fence to walk.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah,
I get better at it every year, I think. I haven't fallen.
Don't envy your job. All right, that concludes agenda item number 7. I want to stop for a second and recognize presiding chair of the Fire Commission has joined us, Michael Glenn. And I don't know if it is legal. I always look at Frank, is this legal? Can we have him say a few words if he's so inclined? Related to the future agenda of the Health and Wellness Committee.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Go for it. You might want to read number 9 in.
Okay, so well, we're gonna pass over number 8 and go straight to number 9, subject for future agenda items, and I'd like to recognize Michael Glenn. That's Velcroed up. You're probably getting the trade seats.
Howdy.
Howdy.
No, I appreciate, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to y'all. Once we were going through the process with appointing a new presiding officer, I've made a point to get into Austin and be here for each of the committee meetings. I was here for an advisory committee, curriculum and testing. At least wanted to stop in. I was over in the Capitol this morning. I saw your husband. He was over getting ready to testify, I think, again on another bill. But really appreciate the work that everyone does. We have, an important responsibility as the commission and the commissioners. But, a lot of the work that we do, we're the face of it. But really, y'all are the ones doing the hard work at the committee level and, coming up with projects and working through different ideas. And really, y'all make our job easy because the hard part's done. The research is done. The evaluation's been done. And so then it just gives us a chance. But really do appreciate y'all coming down. I know what it means to have to travel into Austin to give up your time away from family or to give up time away from the job and just balance that. Trust me, I know what that travel is like. So really do appreciate what y'all do. I'm thrilled to be taking on this new role. As I've told many people, and I think Chief Wisco and some of y'all probably would agree, I'm getting the chance to do things that when I started off as a firefighter, I didn't even know existed. I sit in a seat as a district vice president that I didn't even know that position existed. I worked for a department where we had a DVP that came from that department. I didn't even know who he was. Never even heard his name. So I'm honored to get to do what I do, but really working with brothers and sisters like yourselves from all departments across our great state means a lot to me. And I've said more than I plan to, but I didn't expect the opportunity, and y'all know me. I'll get up and talk. So I appreciate it. Thank y'all very much, and thanks to the staff. Chief Wisco's leading a great staff. We really are. We're light years ahead of where we used to be, so thank you very much.
Absolutely are. Thank you, sir. Thank you. Any other conversation on number 9 subjects for future agenda items?
I got a couple of things.
Yes, sir.
Frank's got some.
Put me on the spot.
No, I thought you had your hand up. But you had
to... No.
Oh.
I was just waving it.
Oh, okay. While we're on number 9, I want to give you guys a little bit of an update on what's going on here at the agency. So, obviously, we had 9 exceptional requests to the legislature. Not going to get in the weeds on all of it, but I'll tell you that we're asking for 11 more full-time employees. We're asking for the associated equipment and vehicles that go with putting folks in the field. The bulk of those 11 would be compliance officers. The workload that the current 9 are under is not sustainable with investigations, compliance inspections, complaints, everything that's going on. So IT programmers, more staff for testing and certification. An interesting one that actually they're all doing quite well, but this one's doing a lot better than I expected. We're asking for $400,000 for training money to get 200 trainers in Texas for an IFF program called Responding to the Interface. It's a WUI program. It's not necessarily a wildland training program. It's teaching structural firefighters to respond, make appropriate decisions, and take appropriate action at a WUI event. That has gotten some great traction. In fact, both the Senate and the House pushed it forward. The House tacked on an extra $200,000. So we'll see how that plays out. Nothing's done yet. But of all our exceptional items, that one bubbled to the top. Everything we've asked for so far is in the budget. We had some funding for personnel reclassification and salary increases that made it into Article 11. The word continues to be that items in Article 11 are most likely going to make it as well. So, very positive report today from our exceptional request, and it's a wait and see. We've got to get to the end of the marathon here to see how it goes. But right now, everybody's been extremely supportive of what we've asked for. At the same time, it's been brought up a lot today. There is a lot of legislation out there that relates back to the fire service, a lot of legislation that ties back duties and responsibilities to this agency. January, February, and early March were rather peaceful, other than the budget stuff. I didn't have to go to the Capitol a lot. I can tell you in the last 4 weeks, I've spent a couple of days a week at the Capitol, because now it has been realized that they've assigned a lot of these responsibilities in this legislation that's pushing through to this agency, but everybody forgot to reach out to us for any kind of information on it. So now we're playing some catch-up, and I've spent two of the last 3 days down there playing catch-up and explaining who we are and what we do and how we can help them, and I fully expect, if I don't get called down there this afternoon, I will tomorrow on some more of this. But there's a lot, mental health, cancer, worker comp issues. There's a lot of stuff that's being tied back to the fire commission. Is going to have some role in it if it passes. So we'll see how it all plays out. I hope it doesn't all hit at the same time, but we're going to get through it if it does. So just know that we're on that. We also have some legislation that we requested, House Bill 3732. As you guys know, the NFPA is retooling and combining all their standards out there. 1970 just came out. It combines PPE with SCBAs. When they pushed it out in September, they said the manufacturers have 12 months from September to start making the new PPE available. On the SCBA side, they gave them 18 months. The commissioners entertain the idea because they can assign an implementation date in Texas. We set it as September of 26 that we'll start enforcing this. September 25 that we'll start enforcing this. After they made that decision, NFPA said, hold on a minute, we don't think 12 months is going to be enough because the manufacturers are pushing back. So they're still considering 18 months or even longer on the actual availability of the material. All that's in flux right now. So we went to the legislature and asked for a change in 419 that gives us something that we have probably assumed, but it's not in the law, and that is the flexibility to work with the departments. We have to enforce that they all meet 1970. What we're not allowed to do by law right now is to work with them. So let's say I'll pick Department A is trying to buy new PPE, and they get the order in, and the manufacturer or the distributor comes back and says it's going to be 27 months before we can get it. The problem is the law says they got to have it September of this year. They're not going to meet that. Right now we don't legally have the flexibility to work with them on that. So 3732, if it passes, would give us a two-year window to help everyone become compliant with the changes in 1970. It's language that has a sunset date on it. In other words, it would go away in September of 27. Gives us a two-year window to work with. This is something that compliance and us within the agency said, we need to ask for this. Doesn't mean we're not going to work with you. Mike Wisco's not a fan of stepping out on a limb. I'm like Chief Boker here. If this is the picture of fit for duty, we're in trouble. But I don't like stepping out on a limb and challenging the law. So this would give us that flexibility that I think we need. If we have success with it, there's always an opportunity to go back and ask for more. But it gets pretty challenging when you start manipulating the actual statutory authority of the organization, because you get to the last, the 11th or 12th hour at the legislature, a lot can get tacked on or changed in that. So, anyway, a lot going on at the Capitol right now. two other things I wanted to just share with you all as the Health and Wellness Committee. January 31st, surprisingly, I'll say, I was elected as the chair of the Firefighter Cancer Support Network. It's a new role. It's a nonprofit organization. I do that in my spare time. And anyway, I think it's going to open some doors, not only for the state of Texas, but for everybody. And it's a very worthwhile organization. I think you made a comment earlier about the gap in the surviving it and what do you do. And that's something we've been kicking around at the network now because we need to get better at that. We've done a lot on the prevention. We've done a lot on the awareness. We need to get better at how we help you get back and stay back. But I did put in front of you all this morning a copy of Crackle magazine. The Cancer Network partnered with Crackle. They did this this first edition that's dedicated solely to cancer awareness. It's something that we hope to continue. These were actually unveiled and distributed at FDIC, and I will be strategically carrying them with me everywhere I go in the state of Texas till I run out, and then I'll get some more. But I wanted to get it in your hands, obviously, for what this committee is doing, but take it back, leave it on the kitchen table, wherever you want to put it so people can see it. If you want some more, I can help you get those. The goal is to get these out. And so I just wanted to make that available to all of you there. It's a very fine line, and Frank and I had to have a conversation about me even being on this board. So then when I got the appointment as the chair, it changed things. But I think it is going to be beneficial, even here in Texas. So, and we're doing a lot here in Texas that the rest of the country is looking at. So I'm proud of that. I'm proud to be carrying that torch. So just know you'll probably hear a lot more from me on that. If you guys as a committee feel you need some help or some support or some input from the network, let me know. We can make that happen. So
Perfect. That's
all
I think related. You said two things, and you talked about your appointment as a chairperson.
In the Crackle magazine.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Good deal.
Request would come directly to you for additional copies.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Just reach out. I can help you. Also, if we support firefighters and their families when they get diagnosed. So if you know of somebody, the information's available in there. But if you want to get a toolbox to somebody, firefighters are terrible about asking for help. Reach out. I'll put the order in and we'll get it to you. Just in the last week, I know of 7 requests that came in from Texas. And all of them were filled within 5 days, which is remarkable. I think they do a great job for a small group of volunteers handling an international audience. They do a great job of getting those out. So if I can help you with that, let me know.
Do you have any connection to the people that are on this second or third page where it says Crackle Experts? And then it gives all the subjects. Let's see. It's 1, 2, 3 pages in. It's a dark page, and then it has thank you to our partners.
Oh,
The one that's on the right-hand column?
No, we do, and I don't know if it's good or bad. A lot of them all overlap. Sarah, Yankee, one of them. But, yeah, we do have access to all of them. I've made a lot of friends in the last 3 months as chairman, and Frank Lieb and working close with the IFF and the I Chiefs and the NVFC. So, if you need help reaching out to any of these people, even if I don't know them or have contact, somebody in our group does, and we can help with that.
Okay, awesome. Thank you, and congratulations.
Thanks.
They could not have gotten a better person as their chair. Yeah.
I think the jury's still out on that, but they hadn't scared me off yet either.
I have ultimate confidence in you, Chief. Ultimate confidence. All right, any other discussion on future agenda items?
Chief, don't know if it's an actual agenda item, but most appropriate. I'd like to remind everybody of the IAFC safety stand down this year, going on June 15th through the 21st. The resource page was just released today. This year's topic is covering Break the Stigma, Behavioral Health Reset, with 5 days of topics. Recognizing, educating, strategies, empowerment, and training. Just like to remind everybody and then ask that we help promote that as a resource.
That's great information. And what a timely topic, too. And I always struggle with, I'm kind of talking personally here, I struggle with that week of how do you stand down and say, we're going to be really safe for this week. And as you were talking, I'm like, that's the perfect stand down topic right there to like take a topic and put it to bed. Or you're never going to put it to bed, but like make it front and center. So great reminder. Thank you. All right, we're going to move back to agenda item number 8, discussion possible action regarding health and wellness officer program. So I'll remind you, this we had a couple of topics that centered over this that went unassigned, and just listening to the work that's gone on, I'm going to propose that we don't try and get somebody sitting up here to take this on, that we table it, but... an idea I had was to get with testing and curriculum and with the agency staff to see if the right direction for health and wellness officer program might be a voluntary compliance certification. And so we start working in that direction in our work with it to do a handoff to testing and curriculum that would ultimately go to staff. Or is it better to just do the typical wellness committee information sourcing for departments? Do you have an opinion on that?
I would tell you a two-prong approach. Continue doing what you're doing with getting information out, but work with curriculum and testing. And I say that because they're inundated right now between all the NFPA changes going on, tech rescue, and some other things that are on their plate, the rewrite of some of the ARF and Marine and things like that. So I would say get with Chairman McAuliffe, and it's all about timing, and I think he's going to have a really good idea of when something like that could work. I think it's a great idea. I think every one of our new certifications are voluntary, so that's the only way this would work. Mm-hmm. However, I think the curriculum and testing is overburdened right now, and I don't think they would push it away. I think they'd love the opportunity to say, hey, let's put it in the schedule, you know, and figure out how we work towards that.
Any other input on that? All right. Ashley?
I guess just what is the goal of that assigned position?
The health and wellness officer. So it dates. It dates back quite a bit. Well, just to this committee, it was one of the topics that came up in the first meeting we had that we should help departments to establish a health and wellness position to oversee all of this, and it just didn't catch traction. And as we were doling out the assignments, and it's set with two other things for future topics, but I just had the idea that perhaps it makes sense to, instead of addressing it as just more information going out to work in conjunction, to make it something bigger than just this committee is the idea I had.
It's like a liaison between us and the specific department?
No, it would actually be a department. I'm envisioning it as a department representative that's the assigned, say, okay, health and wellness officer.
Okay.
Homer?
Yeah, I had brought it up also. Because we need a certain individual in that department to go ahead and making sure that he's educated and all this information that he's going to get, and he gives the proper, I guess, procedures or how to go ahead and establish, like, if I have a problem with cancer and I go to you and you're in my department, you have all the information there, could help this individual stuff. So that's basically.
So would it be a similar concept to, say, for instance, the required designated infection control officer? So you have an identified person within an department that holds the responsibility for overseeing all things health and wellness.
Correct.
And then there would be some guidelines and some, these are the things that you should do, these are the things you should consider, that kind of stuff, similar to that?
Correct, yeah. Okay. That way they know that they're getting the right information and that individual knows where to go, because there's a lot of departments that don't have that resource, and they're kind of
that individual's like, well, I need to call that department. I need to call this. But if we can establish that, it'd be great.
Like my previous department, we had a health and wellness officer that was a staff member, and then we had safety officers on each shift that was as otherwise assigned. One of those, but they were responsible for the overall safety of their shift. But the health and wellness officer had the infectious control under them, along with environmental controls and engineering controls, training controls, all those, you know, the total safety package. And so that was just kind of the idea, is to set departments up for success. Yes, sir.
Forgive me, just I'm probably gonna have to catch up on some background, but previously did we look at the Pro Board Health and Safety Officer certification as a standard for it? Because it already exists. It's administered right now through FDSOA. But there is already a Health and Safety Officer Pro Board curriculum that's already out there. The second part, and I hear Homer, and I've heard you in the meetings talk about what aligns with it. Because if you were to look at the, it's going to be broader. It's more of what you just explained, Chief. And then if we, as the committee or the direction, wants to give more specific topics that they should be, you know, beyond the certification, is there anything that exists currently from the commission standard in a position like that, or will this all be new? So what I'm hearing you, Homer, like, you know, under the certification program, it just says administers department safety programs. And if we're wanting it to be specific for specific items, like, I don't know of anything else that exists that ties it to that currently as a model. So, but there is a certification that already exists that we could use in.
Well, and ideally, that's what curriculum and testing is going to look for. They want something that's already there that they can take. Now, we're in IFSAC state. IFSAC and Pro Board don't get along.
Yeah.
However, we have reciprocity with TEKS. If they teach a Pro Board class, you can get a state certification for that. You just can't get the IFSAC seal for that. So there's a lot of ways to work this. And Michael's right. I mean, we want to take something that's already out there. We don't want to reinvent the wheel.
But not so much that it looks identical. Like, well, I don't want to disparage anybody's programs because the Fire Department Safety Officers Association is pretty proud of their program, and they should be. It's a good certification. And so maybe it looks similar. Maybe it looks.
And just as a background, that's changed from all of our prior experience from 15 years ago when the fireworks went off. Mm-hmm. It's actually self-administered. There's a way you self-administer. It's a $99 test. So it's much different than it used to be than when it, now if you bring them in to do the class, there's the cost there. Yeah. But it's more of the point being is there is a set curriculum that's already recognized that can be reviewed regarding whether or not that's what we would recommend to the.
Sorry, I don't write as fast as I think. All right, any other discussion on the Health and Wellness Officer Program? All right, then we'll move up to number 10, future meeting dates. Next one is scheduled for July 17th, and after that, October 23rd, both of those at 10 a.m. All right, and in discussing those future meeting dates, I want to go on record to recognize, I know that the work that you guys do, some of it's on your own time, and some of it's taken away from your family, and some of it's taken away from your fire department. I want to recognize the Pflugerville Fire Department, the Murphy Fire Department, Longview Fire Department, Cedar Park Fire Department, Portland Fire Department, San Antonio Fire Department, Houston Fire Department, Euless Fire, Dallas Fire, Mission Fire Department, and Fulcher-Simonton Fire Department for their dedication to giving us the ability to be on this committee and give us the time to work on it. That's making the Texas Fire Service better. And with that, item number 11, I have a motion for adjournment.
I'll make the motion to adjourn.
Motion by Story.
I second.
Second by Salinas. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? We are adjourned at 12:11. We beat it by 4 minutes. I got to be in Rosenberg.